decline in American Catholicism is going out. Good news is we can do something about that. Question is, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Because I can tell you one thing for absolute certain, business as usual is not going to turn the tide. Business as usual isn't going to get the job done. We need a game changer. What do we need? We need a game changer. And so what I want to talk to you about this morning is game changers. We need game changers for our own spiritual life. We need game changers for our parishes. And we need game changers for the church in America. We need game changers for the church universal. Business as usual isn't going to get the job done. I think you know that. I think I know that. It might slow the tide, but it's not going to turn the tide. We've got to start thinking about it. What is going to turn the tide for Catholicism in America? What's going to turn? It's been a tough time to be Catholic in America of late. Yes or yes? It's been a tough time to be Catholic in America of late. You know, the last 10 years, last decade now almost, it's been a very tough time to be Catholic. Certainly the scandals, the victims, the cover-up, the lawsuits, all of that's a tragedy, you know. But I think there are a couple of tragedies in the midst of all of that that we've overlooked. And one of those is that as Catholics, we have essentially forgotten our story. And worse than that, we're allowing the anti-Catholic American media to tell our story for us. And they've got people convinced that Catholicism is about a handful of priests who don't know what it means to be a priest. And that's not Catholicism. There are 1.2 billion Catholics on the planet. How many Catholics on the planet?
1.2 billion.
1.2 billion Catholics on the planet. There are 67 million Catholics in America. And every single day the Catholic Church feeds more people, houses more people, clothes more people, visits more imprisoned people, takes care of more sick people, and educates more people than any other institution on the planet Earth could ever hope to. And let me ask you a couple of questions. When Jesus was alive, where were the sick people? They're in hospitals, right? They're in the hospital. We read in the scriptures, Jesus came to the village. He said, take me to the nearest hospital. I want to cure some sick people. No, never any such thing as a hospital. Everything that's good about modern healthcare emerged through the church. Emerged through the religious orders. Let me ask you another question. Raise your hand if your parents are kings, queens, dukes, earls, duchesses, knights, royalty or nobility of any type. No, there wouldn't be a single educated person here today. You know, education for the masses isn't the invention of some modern government. It was the church that came along and said everyone deserves an education. That's the reality. You know, this year, Catholic parishes, and how many people have a school in their parish? You got a school in your parish? This year, Catholic parishes and parents will spend $10 billion educating grade school and high school students. Okay, $10 billion. Just in America alone, Catholic parents and parishes will spend educating grade school and high school students. If we close down all our schools tomorrow and send all of those students to the public education system, it would cost the U.S. taxpayer $18 billion to educate the same students. We do it better, we do it cheaper. Maybe we should have a billboard in every city. We could put one up here in Pittsburgh. This year, Catholic education will save the U.S. taxpayer $18 billion. You're welcome. Perfect church, you go ahead and join it. It won't be perfect anymore. That's the dilemma.
That's fine.
And so that's the dilemma we're faced with. Question is, where are the game changers? And do we just keep on going business as usual? Because I got to tell you, sometimes I just keep on going business as usual. I came to my staff 3 years ago. I said, all right, if we stop doing everything we're currently doing, okay, if we stop doing everything we're currently doing, and we decide, okay, what are we going to do for the next 15 years? We can do anything. What should we do? They said, well, we want to do what we're already doing. I mean, I think it's doing good and it's good. I said, I know, that could be true. But if we were forced to stop doing all of those things and we had to find new things to do, what new things would we do? They came to me with two ideas. First one I was massively skeptical of. Just completely skeptical of. They come to me, they said, okay, we've come up with some ideas. I said, all right, what do you got? They said, this Christmas, let's give away some free books. I said, excuse me? They said, this Christmas, let's give away some free books. I said, why? They said, 32% of people who are in church at Christmas, it's the only time they go to church each year, and they go home empty-handed every year. Let's give them a book this year. You know, let's take 10 parishes. Let's take maybe 50,000 books. I said, excuse me? They said, yeah, let's take 50,000 books, and let's just take 10 or 12 big parishes and let's give every person who leaves church a free book this Christmas. I said, you people are going crazy. I said, all right, we'll try. So they take these 50,000 books, they give away 50,000 free books and about, it end up being 14 parishes. Every person who left Mass on Christmas Day on Christmas Eve got a free book. Stories we started getting incredible. Absolutely incredible. 2009. We then made books available, $2 each, to parishes. We shipped about 300,000 copies. 2010, we shipped 600,000 copies. This year, we'll probably ship maybe 2 million copies. We're shipping about 25,000 copies a week at the moment. I think you're all going to get a copy on the way out today. Everyone will get a free copy on the way out today, so stay all day. I think that's the plan, you know, stay all day. You don't have the book, you didn't stay all day. You know, we know you didn't stay all day because you don't have the book, you know. But here's the thing. 70% of Catholics don't go to church anymore. We know 32% of them show up at Christmas. We've got to do something to engage the disengaged. We've got to do something to engage the disengaged. I was so skeptical of this project. I mean, just massively skeptical of this project. And I can't tell you the emails we get everywhere. This book brought me back to the church, brought my wife back, brought my son back. You know, just extraordinary. It's a game changer. And it's so simple. And that's the thing about game changers. They're always simple. You come up with a complicated game changer, it's not a game changer. Not going to work. Not going to happen. Second one we're working on is dynamiccatholic.com. How many people have visited dynamiccatholic.com? Okay, just a few. Basically, at dynamiccatholic.com, what we want to build is the major programs that are used in the church. First communion, confirmation, marriage prep, youth group program. Why? Well, people are not investing in these programs. In many cases, we're using the same programs that were developed 30 years ago. And the reason is because people are not buying these programs, so publishing companies are not investing in creating great programs. But more than that, you know, we've spent 2 years researching this. Interviewed 120 youth ministers in 2010. Of the 120, we interviewed them all on a Monday. Of the 120, not a single one could tell us what they were going to teach 2 Sunday nights from now. No continuity. No continuity. There are 16,000 parishes in the United States. About half of those parishes have a youth group program. That's 8,000. How many Catholic youth group programs are there in the United States? 8,000. Every parish does it their own way. Who belongs to a parish that has so much money and so much talent and so much time and so many volunteer hours that they can build the best Catholic youth group program in the world? Just a show of hands. Yeah, none of us. None of us belong to a parish that has enough money or enough talent or enough resource to build the best Catholic youth group program in the world. Why do we have 8,000? Why haven't we got together, hungry for best practices, and said, okay, as a group, let's build the best Catholic youth group program in the world, and then let's make it available by the internet at no cost to parishes, so that every Catholic parish in America can use the best Catholic youth group program in the world. Why haven't we got together and done the same thing for marriage prep? Why haven't we got together and done the same thing for confirmation and CCD and First Communion and baptism and NRCIA? Why can't we get together? We've got to become hungry for best practices. What do we got to get hungry for?
Best practices.
Got to get hungry for best practices. That's part of looking for game changers. People who are looking for game changers are hungry for best practices. They don't want to reinvent it if it's already been done really well. They only want to invent the part of the process that hasn't been done fabulously well already. And they don't want to carry the whole load of a project themselves. They want to get 10 talented people together and put the best in the world together. Game changer. DynamicCatholic.com if you haven't visited, take a visit. Read the case statement. We just got a beta site up there at the moment, but read the case statement. Have a vision. Read the vision. We've got to be looking for game changers. What are we going to be looking for? Now you're here today. You're here today. You've invested this day. If you leave here today without a game changer, shame on you. You got to find a game changer. I'm going to give you two. Jim Lasante probably give you six straight after me. And then, you know, all the speakers, there's going to be game changers there. You can't take them all. Just take the one. You're going to be looking for your game changer all day long. You're going to be looking for your game changer. I talked to you about two. Number one, where does the Catholic spiritual life begin? Begins in confession. People always say to me, why do you start with that one? Couldn't you let people warm up a little bit? Every journey towards something is a journey away from something. And sometimes it's just as important to know what you're journeying away from as it is to know what you're journeying toward. That's why confession plays such a powerful role. Here's the thing I know for sure. Nobody excels at anything without some sort of coaching. Okay? Sustainable excellence is not possible without coaching. Question is, where are you getting your spiritual coaching from? In the last 10 Summer Olympic Games, 40 years of Summer Olympic Games, how many athletes do you think went to the Olympic Games without a coach? Zero. Not a single athlete in the last 40 years has gone to the Olympics without a coach. Why? They value coaching. Why? Sustainable excellence is not possible without coaching. Where are you getting your spiritual coaching from? These athletes, they're the best in the world at what they do. And yet still every single one of them has a coach. I suspect you and I are not the best in the world at being Catholics. Where's our spiritual coaching? Where are you getting your spiritual coaching from? Who's your spiritual coach? We need spiritual coaching. That's just the reality of the situation. Why? Coaches see things we don't see. Coaches see things we don't see. Confession's a great place to get a little bit of spiritual coaching. I know all the excuses people say to me, oh, I can't go to confession. I say, why not? I say, well, my priest, he knows me. I thought that was your idea. Oh, no, no, no. If he knew my sins, he would never talk to me ever again. Don't kid yourself. You're not that original. You know? Like, seriously, when was the last time you were in confession? Father said, hold on a minute, I gotta write that one down, that's a new one. I gotta email that straight over to Rome, that's a new one. You haven't heard of that one before? No! Besides, think about it. When you go to the doctor, which doctor do you want to go to? You want to go to a different doctor every time you go to the doctor? You'll be able to soon, they're working on it. Yeah, they're working on that. No, no, seriously. Seriously, when you go to the doctor, you want to go to your doctor. Yes or yes?
Yes.
Why? Because he knows you. And he knows your history. And because he knows you and your history, he can help you better. He can help you better. Same with confession. Same with spiritual coaching. The more they know you, the more open you are with them, the more they can help you. That's just the reality. I said, people want it. Okay, you don't want to talk to him. You don't want to know it. It's you or whatever. Go behind the screen. Oh, I can't go behind the screen. Why not? Even if I go behind the screen, he knows what my voice sounds like. I try confessing in an Australian accent. Matthew Kelly? I got a lot of friends, you know. You know, we live in a culture that believes sin and evil doesn't exist. You know, that's our culture's position on sin and evil. They don't exist. If you believe that, go home tonight, watch your 6 o'clock news. After you watch your 6 o'clock news tonight, if you still believe sin and evil don't exist, seek professional help. It's real. Look around the world. Sin and evil are real. They're real in our lives, and they're real in the world. You know, and I guess it would be lovely if we could just gather up all the evil people, wouldn't it? Just gather them all up, all the evil people, put them on one island. Just let them have at it. You know, just let them self-destruct. Just gather up all the evil people, put them on one island. Oh, I just remembered, that doesn't work. They tried that once. That's right, down in Australia. Yeah, the reason we can't just gather up all the evil people and put them on one island is because there is a line that separates good from evil, but it isn't out there somewhere. The line that separates good from evil is cast down the center of my heart, in the center of yours. The battle isn't out there, the battle's in here. That's the reality. I got a lot of friends, Catholics and non-Catholics, who say to me things like, well, I don't need to go to confession to a priest. I say, why not? They say, because me and Jesus, we're mates. We are mates. We are buddies. We are close. We are tight. We are friends. I just tell Jesus my stuff. He forgives me. Lovely idea, isn't it? Really? No, it's a lovely idea. The only problem with it doesn't work. You know why? Because you and me, we're human beings. And as human beings, we have a phenomenal ability to deceive ourselves. Yes or yes?
Yes.
Oh, we have an outrageous ability to deceive ourselves. That's why the me and Jesus thing doesn't work. You know what happens after a while with the me and Jesus thing? Most dangerous part of the me and Jesus thing? After a while, we start to create God in our image. Yeah. Consider the dangers. In fact, go home, spend the next couple of years studying 200 years of American Christianity. And what happens on an ever-increasing basis, decade after decade after decade, we create God more and more in our image. Dangerous stuff. Dangerous stuff. The reason it doesn't work, we deceive ourselves. The reason we deceive ourselves, not because we're bad people, just because we don't see things as they really are. You see, when I come to confession, half the time, I need the priest to say to me, Matthew, you're being too easy on yourself. The other half the time, I need the priest to say, Matthew, you're being too hard on yourself. I never see things as they really are. You never see things as they... We never see things as they really are. We all think we've got 20/20 vision, but we don't. We all think we've got 20/20 vision, you know, in our marriage. We think we've got 20/20 vision in our parenting. We think we've got 20/20 vision in our career or in our business or how the school should be run or how the parish should be run. We think we've got 20. Certainly everyone in America's got 20/20 political vision. You know? We think we've got 20/20 vision. We think we see things as they really are. Yes or yes?
Yes.
But we don't see things as they really are. In fact, we almost never see things as they really are. And if you think that's not true, think about it like this. How many guys play golf? You play golf here in Pittsburgh? Yeah? Good. Glad to hear that. Anybody ever had their golf swing video recorded? Yeah? You had your golf swing recorded? Yeah? Good, good, good. When you got the DVD back, did it look like what you thought it would look like? No, of course it didn't. You know? In your mind, you're like Tiger Woods, you know? I mean, not like Tiger Woods, but I mean, just the golf swing. Just the golf swing, all right? In your mind, your golf swing is like Tiger Woods, and then you get this DVD back, you think, well, that's my body, but that's not my golf swing. Whose golf swing did they Photoshop into my body right here, because that is not my golf swing? Here's the thing. Record yourself doing anything. Record yourself doing anything. Something you think you do good, something you think you do bad, record yourself doing anything. And what will you discover? You don't look like what you think you look like. We almost never see things as they really are. Record yourself doing anything, you discover you don't look like what you look like, what you think you look like. You don't sound sound like what you think you sound like. Win-loss never see things as they really are. That's why we need coaching. That's why we need confession. That's why we need wives. Seriously. Seriously, how often does your wife come to you and say, "You're not seeing this right"? She's probably right. We almost never see things as they really are. We shouldn't be surprised when someone says to us, "You're not seeing this right." We shouldn't be surprised. We should think, "Yeah, that's probably true. What do you got for me? How do you see it? What do you see from where you are?" Interestingly, best players almost never make the best coaches. Best players almost never make the best coaches. Different set of skills. You know, as fathers and husbands, we need both set of skills. Yes or yes?
Yes.
I mean, not that you should be a player. That's not what I'm saying. We didn't even get a good courtesy chuckle for that one. Anyway, here's the thing. When I go to confession, half the time I need the priest to say you're being too easy on yourself. Half the time I need the priest to say you're being too hard on yourself. Think about the gift of that. Here's a guy. These guys giving their whole life just to help you become the best version of yourself. Giving their whole lives just to help people become all God created them to be. What sort of a blessing is that? And maybe you still think you don't need any spiritual coaching. That's possible. You think about it, you know. Olympic athletes. Go to the gym in the morning at 5 o'clock. And who's there when they get to the gym? Their coach. You know, why? Because in 5:01, if they're not there, who's calling them? Their coach. You know, Olympic coaches, they don't say, "Listen, go down to the gym at 5 o'clock in the morning. You know what to do, and I'll see you about 8:30. It doesn't work like that. Why? We need accountability. What do we need? You want a game changer? Get some accountability. Want a game changer in your life? Get some accountability. Start measuring something in your life. Okay? Start measuring something in your life. Write down how long you pray for every day. You'd be amazed how many minutes there are in a week and how little you pray. I'll give you another one. Write down how long you work out for each week. Keep a workout log. Write down how much you work out every day. Keep it. Carry it around with you. Write it down. How much you work out for every... You'd be amazed how little we work out. I got another one for you. Write down everything you eat for a month. You'd be amazed how much we eat. It's outrageous how much we eat. It's ridiculous how much we eat. But what happens when you start writing stuff down? You measure it, you can change it. Can't measure it, can't change it. I make my living as a business consultant, you know. And you know what I discovered about the best companies we work with? We have 43, me and my partners, we have 43 Fortune 500 companies as clients. And I can tell you the very best companies measure everything. What do they measure?
Everything.
But the reality is, if you look at these executives, they're trained in this process of measuring everything, because if you can't measure it, you can't change it. They're trained in this process of measuring everything, but then you look at their lives, what do they measure? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. They've got this genius process at work, that they're engaged in this genius process at work every day of their career, and then at home, they just completely forget the genius of the process. You want a game changer? Start measuring something in your life. Start measuring something in your life. Start measuring what you eat or how often you work out or how much you pray. Start measuring something. What happens? Accountability. Journals don't lie. That's the truth. Scales don't lie. Journals don't lie. That's the reality. Start measuring something. You're looking for a game changer. What happens then? You get accountability. Our culture is allergic to accountability. Yes or yes? Absolutely allergic. Absolutely allergic to accountability. You want to have some fun? You want to put your feet to the fire? Decide to change something in your life and allow your wife to hold you accountable to that. Yeah. That's a game changer right there. You talk about some serious accountability, that's it right there. You think about it when you go to work. You go to work, you know, once a quarter or twice a year or once a year, you have a review process. Yes or yes? Yeah, okay, the very best companies, they have fabulous review processes. How many people have a good review process at work? You got a good view? Some of you don't have a good review process. Okay, so you have to get a good review process from the other people who have a good review process, and then redesign that for your personal. hungry are we for game change? How hungry are we for game changes in our lives, in our spirituality, in our churches, in our businesses? We've got to get hungry for game changes. And confession, I'm telling you, I like to go once a month. I need to go once a month, truth be told. And I'll tell you why. I think about it like this. How many people drive a car? You drive cars here in Pittsburgh? Yeah. It's more than golf, which is disturbing to me, but what can you do? How many people, just raise your hand, literally, if you haven't washed your car, or had your car washed, if your car hasn't been washed in any way, shape, or form for 10 years, just raise your hand. There's always a couple, and if we dug into it, what we discover is they're deceiving themselves. You know, they're not seeing things as they really are. You know, most of us, we like to wash our car every 2 or 3 years. You know? And you think about it, when you get your car washed, it's all clean on the inside, it's all clean on the outside. You feel pretty good about that. Yes or yes? It's just a car, but you feel differently because it's clean. It's just a car, but it's all clean. It could be the biggest heap of junk in the state of Pennsylvania, but it's clean. It feels good. It doesn't have any wheels, but it's clean. It's clean and it feels good. It's clean. It feels good. So seriously, when you wash your car, it's all clean on the outside, all clean on the inside, you feel good. Yes or yes? You should try taking a shower sometime. Amazing. Can't even imagine. No, seriously. Seriously. And then you get your car washed and then you're driving down the road. What do you pray? You pray it doesn't rain. Just got your car washed. Like God doesn't have better things to worry about. You know, and then you're driving down the road the next day. There's a big pile of mud in the middle of the road. What do? You go around it. You just got your car washed. A couple days after that, you're going somewhere. Teach yourself, it might get cold. I better take a jacket. You take a jacket, but you don't need the jacket. So what do? You say to yourself, I put this jacket neatly on the back seat. I'll get it later. Do you get it later? No. A couple days after that, you go in somewhere, you think, I gotta go to the doctor today. I better take a good magazine or a book or something. Because they never have any good ones in the waiting room. Besides, I mean, think about it for a minute. What sort of people go to the doctor? Sick people, that's right. Sick people go to the doctor. And then we put them all in this little waiting room with 5 magazines. They touch those magazines with their sick fingers. Then you show up to the doctor and it says on the cover of the magazine, February 1983. You think to yourself, how many sick people have been here since February 1980? Thanks, I'll bring my own. I appreciate the offer. I'll bring my own. You get done with the doctor, you say to yourself, better put this book on the back seat. I'll get it later. Later when? Later when you get the jacket. You get it later? No. A couple days after that, you throw another little bit of trash back there. A couple days after that, you throw another little bit of junk back there. Before you know it, it's Sunday, and you're coming home from church. What have you got now? Oh yeah, you got the bulletin, don't you? Yeah, you got the bulletin, which you probably read while Father was giving his homily, didn't you? Yeah. You think he doesn't see you reading that bulletin? You think, oh, I'll sneak a read of the bulletin, he won't see it. Wrong, he sees you reading that bulletin. They see everything from up there. You think he doesn't see you, and then you come out after church, you say, hi Father, how are you today? You know what he's thinking to himself? Bulletin reader. Bulletin reader. Anyway, he thinks, if I read this thing, I'll chuck it back in the back seat. I'll get it later. Do you get it later? No. A couple days after that, another little piece of junk. A couple days after that, another little bit of trash. Before you know it, you're throwing big bits of trash back there. You know why? Because a big bit of trash doesn't look that bad amongst all those little bits of trash. Now, does it? We lose our sensitivity to sin in exactly the same way. Because after a while, big self-destructive behavior doesn't look that bad amongst all those little ones. You think about it, when you get your car washed, you're sensitive about the things that make your car dirty. Yes or yes? Yeah, when you get your car washed, you're sensitive about the things that make your car dirty. You don't want it to rain, you just got your car washed. You don't drive through the pile of mud, you just got your car washed. When you get your car washed, you're sensitive about the things that make your car dirty. Same thing with confession. When you go to confession, you're sensitive about the things that stop you from becoming the best version of yourself. That's grace. Okay? We talk a lot about grace in Christianity. We have a lot of, you know, theological, philosophical definitions of grace. I'll give you grace at work, practical and real. How do you know grace exists? Because when you go to confession, after confession, you're sensitive about the things that stop you from becoming the best version of yourself. That's grace. Real, practical, there. But after a while, you know, it wears off. Morally, after a while, big pile of mud in the middle of the road, we just go straight through it. You know, if you wash your car, if you haven't washed your car in a year, and there's a big pile of mud in the road, what do? You just drive straight through it. Same thing happens morally. Same thing happens morally. There's genius in Catholicism. There is genius in Catholicism. We've got to start delving into it a little bit. Got to start delving into it. You want a game changer? Confession once a month for a year. First, the two I'm going to give you. I'm sure there's going to be other game changers offered today. I'm going to give you two. You want a game changer? Confession once a month for the next 12 months. Get yourself some spiritual coaching. Send me an email. Send me an email 12 months from now. Tell me if that wasn't a game changer. Second one. I want to talk to you for you. I want to talk to you about it for your kids. I want to talk to you about it before you perish. I want to talk to you about it because it's the center of the Catholic life. That's going to Mass on Sunday. What is the most common thing we hear from kids about Mass? Sorry, I didn't hear you.
Boring.
Yeah, it's boring, you know. We're used to hearing that from kids. Yes or yes? This is not a new problem. We've been hearing this for generations. The disturbing reality, the new problem, the new trend, is that we're hearing it from more and more adults. More and more adults are saying Mass is boring. I don't get anything out of it. It's not relevant to my modern life. Kids are coming to their parents now saying, Mom, Dad, we have to go to church because church is boring. Parents are thinking, so, you know, kid, you're right. Mass is boring. But we're going to go together and be bored. It's a family tradition. We got a problem here. We got a problem here. We got a big problem here. There are 1.2 billion Catholics on the planet. There are 67 million Catholics in America. The central experience of Catholicism is the Mass, and the general consensus, as evidenced by the fact that 70% of people don't even show up, is that the Mass is boring. We got a problem here. We don't fix this, we're done. We got to get at it. We've been talking about it for 20 years, 30 years, longer than I've been alive, we've been talking about this one. Fix this, change this, do this, all that, go back to this, go forward to that, go back to this other thing. We've been talking about it for a long time. Let me give you a summary of what 67 million Catholics sound like when they talk about the Mass. I'll tell you what the problem with the Mass is. I mean, the problem with the Mass is clear. I mean, the problem with the Mass is those altar servers. I mean, have you seen some of the shoes those altar servers wear? I mean, that's the problem with the Mass right there. Oh, no, that's not the problem with the Mass. I don't care what sort of shoes they wear. But couldn't we teach them a little bit of reverence? I mean, that's the problem with the Mass. There's no reverence anymore. That is the problem with the Mass. Oh, no, that's not the problem with the Mass. I'll tell you the problem with the Mass. I'll tell you the problem with the Mass right now. The problem with the Mass is the music. The music in our church is too old-fashioned. That's the problem with the Mass. I mean, it's just too old-fashioned. They're still in the 14th century. I mean, couldn't they at least come to the 16th century? I mean, is that too much to ask? It's just too old-fashioned. Oh, no, that's not the problem with the Mass in our church. The problem with the Mass in our church, the music is too modern. It's just too modern. They've got drums. They've got guitars. They've got saxophones. Jesus didn't have saxophones. That's the problem with the Mass. Oh, no, that's not the problem with the Mass. I tell you the problem with the Mass. The problem with the Mass is the readers. Half of them can't read. Half of them can't see over the pulpit. And half of them can't pronounce half the words. And I realize that's three halves, but that's the extent of the problem. Right there is the extent of the problem right there. Oh, no, that's not the problem with the Mass. I tell you the problem with the Mass. The problem with the Mass, Eucharistic ministers. I mean, who chose those people to be Eucharistic? Must be a volunteer position, because I wouldn't choose some of those people to do anything. That's the problem with the Mass. Oh, no, that's not the problem with the Mass. I'll tell you the problem with the Mass. I'll tell you the problem with the Mass. We need a bigger church. We need a newer church. Oh, no, that's not the problem with the Mass. We don't need a new church. But can we get those soft padded cushions for the seats and the kneels? That's the problem with the Mass. Oh, no, that's not the problem with the Mass. I'll tell you the problem with the Mass, the microphone system. That is the problem with the Mass. I mean, half the time, we can't hear what Father's trying to say. I mean, half the time, we don't want to hear what Father's trying to say. But the half the time when we actually want to hear him, we can't hear what Father's trying to say. That's the problem with the Mass right there, is the problem with the Mass. Oh, no, that's not the problem with the Mass. I'll tell you the problem with the Mass. The problem with the Mass is our priest is too old. I mean, when do they let these guys retire? He is 127. I mean, that is the problem with the mass. Oh, no, that's not the problem with the mass. I tell the problem with the mass, Outreach is too young. He's 14. He's just too young, okay? He needs to go out and live some life and then come back and teach me something about life. That's the problem with the mass. Oh, no, that's not the problem with the mass. I'll tell you the problem with the mass. Tell you the problem with the mass? The parking lot. I mean, where are people expected to park? You want them all to come to church and then there's nowhere for them to park. That's the problem with the mass. Oh, no, that's not the problem with the mass. The real problem with the mass is that coffee they serve after mass. I mean, where do they get that coffee? And when do they start brewing that coffee? On Wednesday morning? That's the problem with the mass. Oh, no, that's not the problem with the mass. The problem with the mass is that and on and on. The problem with the mass isn't out there. That's why we haven't fixed it. 1,000 years from now, social scientists and philosophers get together to characterize our age. They will characterize our age as the age of the abdication of responsibility. That's the age we're living in. We're living in the age of the abdication of responsibility. Nobody's responsible for anything anymore. It's always somebody else's fault. You want to know the problem with the mass? We are the problem with the mass. You come through the doors next week. Actually, that's tomorrow. Come through the doors of church tomorrow for mass. One simple request of God. God, show me one way in this mass I can become a better version of myself this week. And then listen. Listen to the music. Listen to the readings. Listen to the quiet of your heart. Listen to the preaching. Listen to the prayers, the mass. Listen. Listen for your one thing. Listen for the one thing God says to you. Better than that, go out and get yourself a journal. Get yourself a mass journal. I've been talking about this for a long time. Get yourself a mass journal. Because here's the thing. You know, people who are highly engaged, you know what I know about them for sure? They are continuous learners. Continuous learners. Now, as I look around here today, we've got 2,000 people. We've got about 16 taking notes. You know what that tells me? 1,984 of you didn't think I was going to say anything worth writing down. And I'm okay with that. Really, I'm okay with that. You know what I'm not okay with? I'm not okay with you coming to church on a Sunday without pen and paper. But you know what that says? It says you don't believe that God's going to speak to your church. And He does, and He has, and He will continue to. The question is, when will we start listening? As we read the Bible, what's the most common preface to any sentence God said? God said to Adam, God said to Moses, God said to Noah, God said to everybody. It isn't that God has stopped speaking, it's that we've stopped listening. Get yourself a mass journal. Take it home, write down on the front cover, God, show me one way in this mass if I can become a better version of myself this week. Game changer. Game changer. On the next page, write down the one thing. What does God say to you? How does He challenge you to be a better person this week? And date it. You do that every Sunday for a year, you'll have a game changer. You'll have a powerful spiritual book to take to your prayer. Personalized just for you. I've been doing this for 12 years. I can go into my study at home, and I can take my mass journal off the shelf for any of the last 12 years. I can take the mass journal off the shelf in 2002, I can flip through it, and I can tell you what was happening in my life in 2002. I can tell you what I was struggling with in 2002. I can tell you how God brought me through those struggles. But I can also tell you what I was struggling with in 2002 that I'm still struggling with today. Can you tell me what was happening in your life in 2002? Probably not. You might be able to say, oh, I had a baby, or I got this new job, or I started this new business. But really tell me what was happening in your life in 2002? Probably not. We need to know where we've come from. We need to know that God will lead us through challenges and struggles. We need to know that God will give us answers to our questions. Get yourself a mass journal. I'm telling you, it's a game changer. It's a game changer hungry for best practices. It's a game changer of someone highly engaged because they listen to the voice of God in their life. It's a game changer of continuous learning. It's a game changer. Get yourself a mass journal. But I'll tell you what will happen. You get your mass journal. You take it home. You write down in the front cover, God, show me one way in this mass my spouse can become a better version of herself this week. Sorry, mistakes. Cross that out. God, show me one way in this mass I can become a better version of myself. myself this week. And then you'll bring it to church with you on Sunday. And you'll actually be in the pew before the music starts. I know, it's a crazy idea. You'll actually be in the pew before Father gets to the altar. I know, radical preaching, radical. You know what they call that? Early. That's what that's called. No wonder you guys are always so confused when Father starts preaching about the early Christians. Early Christian? What kind of Christian is that, Father? I never met no early Christians. Father, I'm like a 5 minutes late Christian. And my friend, he's like a before the gospel Christian. As long as he's in before the gospel, because he's a before the gospel Christian. And then I got these other people, they're like straight after communion Christians, you know? It's like straight after communion. They're like straight out of there, straight after communion. Have you seen how empty the church gets straight after communion? That's because all the straight after communion Christians, they leave straight after communion. I've been studying these straight after communion Christians. I've been studying, seriously. I've been trying to work out who's in charge of the straight after communion Christians. Who is the leader of the straight after communion Christians? Somebody's got to work this out because this might be the most organized group of people in the Catholic Church. It's like in every parish, there's a straight out of the communion and a straight out of there. I've been studying it. I've been trying to work it out. I'm trying to work out who's in charge, who's the leader, who started this, where did it go from there, what's the history of straight out of the communion Christians, and I have worked it out now. Judas is the leader of the straight out of the communion Christians. It's in the scriptures. He was the only one to leave the Last Supper early. He got straight out the communion. I know, I'm bad. Pray for me. Anyway, you'll be early. You got your mass journal, you'll be early. You sit down. You say, all right, God, I've tried everything else. Show me one way in this mass I can become a better version of myself this week. And then you'll listen. You'll listen for God's voice in your life. You'll listen to the music. You'll listen to readings. You'll listen to prayers of the mass. You'll listen to the quiet of your heart. You'll listen to preaching. And that one thing, it'll knock you over. It's not like you'd be sitting there thinking, well, I don't know. How am I going to find the one thing? I mean, how do I know if that's the one thing? He said I can only have one thing. What if I take this one thing now and then there's a better one thing later? And I won't be able to get those two one things because I can only get one thing. Holy Spirit doesn't work like that. That one thing, it'll strike you. You write it down on its own page, you'll date it. You go home from church on Sunday focused, energized, invigorated. You think to yourself, this mass journal thing works. Here's the thing, when you listen to the voice of God in your life, when you listen to the voice of God in your life, when you come to church to listen to the voice of God in your life, you're given the grace to look beyond a bad homily. But you're also given the grace to look beyond a good homily. When you listen to the voice of God in your life, you're given the grace to look beyond bad music, but you're also given the grace to look beyond good music. Because it's not about those things. You go home from church on Sunday, you've written down your one thing, you're focused, energized, invigorated. You think, I'm going to do this every Sunday for the rest of my life, so I better put this journal in a safe place. Chuck it in the back seat. Our lives change when our habits change. When do our lives change?
When our habits change.
Not freak luck. God doesn't have any favorites. Our lives change when our habits change. Get yourself a mass journal. Get one for your kids. Get one for your kids. You know, big problem with Catholics is Catholics don't come to church, right? 70% of Catholics don't come to church on Sunday. We did a pilot program with mass journals in grade schools last year. Five schools, grade 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. We asked the teachers, first thing Monday morning, we want you to ask all the kids, what did God say to them at church on Sunday? Teacher said, we can't do that. I said, why not? I said, we already know the kids don't go to church. Only about 30% of the kids go to church on Sunday in a Catholic school. I said, well, Systems drive behaviors. We want to change that. You want to change that as a teacher? As a Catholic school teacher, you want to change that? You work with us, we'll help you change that. So, we gave all the kids a mass journal. Five schools, grades 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. All the kids a mass journal. And then we said to the teachers, first thing Monday morning, before you do anything else on a Monday morning, first thing you're going to ask them, what did God say to your church yesterday? Write it down in your mass journal, and then have a discussion. At the beginning of the semester, the end of August, last year in these five schools, attendance was 32%. By the end of the semester, five schools, grades 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, attendance, 87%. Systems drive behaviors. Systems drive behaviors. When they had the parent-teacher conferences, most common thing the parents said, what are you telling our kids? Every Sunday morning they wake us up to take them to church. Systems drive behaviors. You want a game changer? Get yourself a mass journal. Get one for your kids. On your way home from church, ask your kids, what did God say to your church today? Or maybe you want to ask him individually. What did God say? Ask your spouse, what did God say to your church today? Get yourself a mass journal. Imagine every single person in a parish coming to church on Sunday with a mass journal looking for the one way they can become a better version of themselves this week. Imagine that environment. Hungry for best practices, committed to continuous learning, highly engaged because we're listening to the voice of God in our lives. It's the one sign of engagement. Highly engaged Catholics are listening to the voice of God in their life. Imagine a whole parish that brings a mass journal to mass with them on Sunday. Take it a step further. There are 67 million Catholics in America. Imagine 67 million Catholics coming to church on Sunday looking for the one way they can become a better version of themselves this week. 67 million Catholics in America. It only takes 51 million people to elect an American president. We're not a fringe group. 67 million Catholics in America. That's a sleeping giant. Sleeping giant. I like to wake that giant up. I think it's time. Yes or yes?
Yes.
I think it's time. And so you and I, guys, we've got to become people of possibility. Christianity is about possibilities. Too often as Catholics, we're people of impossibility. People say, can we do this? Oh, no, we can't do that. Why not? Oh, that won't work. How do you know? I got a hunch. Oh, what about this other thing? Can we do that? Oh, that doesn't work. We tried that once before. When? 1947. Maybe things are different now. Probably not. Too often we're people of impossibility. We've got to become people of possibility. Got to become people of possibility. It says in Proverbs 29:18, where there is no vision, people will perish. Where there's no vision, the people will perish. People are perishing in our society. They're perishing in marriage. They're perishing in education. They're perishing as children, they're perishing in their careers, their businesses are perishing, their schools are perishing, their parishes are perishing. Why? Where the heck is the vision? What do we want to accomplish in the next 10 years as Catholics in America? Where's the vision? If you ask 67 million American Catholics, what's the vision for Catholicism in America? You get 67 million answers. We need one answer. We need a vision, because where there's no vision, the people will perish. And people are perishing. Everything great in history has been built by people who believe the future could be bigger than the past. What's a bigger future look like for you? What's a bigger future look like for your marriage? What's a bigger future look like for your parenting and for your family? What does a bigger future look like for your career? For your business? What's a bigger future look like for your parish, for your school? For the church, for our country, what does the bigger future look like? As human beings, we're given two incredible abilities. One is the ability to choose. The other is the ability to dream. The ability to look into the future and envision something in the future and then come back to the present and work in the present to make that future a reality. That's an incredible ability. What are your dreams? What dreams is God placing in your hearts? What are you doing about it? Extraordinary ability. I spent 20 years on the road. I'm convinced about three things when it comes to Catholicism. Number one, there's nothing wrong with Catholicism that can't be fixed by everything that's right with Catholicism. Think about it. When was the last time we got in a scandal because we lived the stuff too much? Oh, that's scandalous. He's just too Catholic. I mean, it's completely scandalous. Call the New York Times. This guy's living Catholicism too much. It's a scandal. We get in trouble when we don't live it. Nothing wrong with Catholicism that can't be fixed by everything that's right with Catholicism. Number two, if you and I are not part of the solution, we are part of the problem. Let's decide today, get involved, be part of the solution. Number three, there are 67 million Catholics in America. If we all stepped it up a notch, something incredible would happen. Yes or yes?
Yes.
So let's step it up a notch. God bless you.